Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, your journey into personal growth. The splendor of any decision is after you've made it, all that remains to be seen are its consequences. My name is Ken Primus. I am your host. Here at Threads of Enlightenment, we talk about the principles of self-development and personal growth. By having conversation with people who have walked through their journey of personal growth. We believe that everyone at some point in their life will have to deal with one or more of these principles to have the privilege of focusing on their self-development as humans. These principles, when applied, can help you to become the best self possible. Welcome to Threads of Enlightenment, as usual. And I know you guys probably get tired of hearing me say this, but it means a lot to me that I first want to stop and welcome the guests, because I know that person is coming with a couple of things that I personally deem very expensive, and that is time. Time is a powerful tool. If one understands the value of it, you appreciate it, you learn how to use it to the best of your ability. And I want to thank Damien for coming and share some of this good stuff with us. The other is his journey. That journey was who he was and how it created him who he is today. And so we are interested in dissecting his journey so that we can learn and become better human spirits while we occupy this beautiful space called Earth. Damien, thank you for coming to Threads of Enlightenment, man.
Thank you very much. I'm super excited to be here.
Excellent. Talk to the people. Tell them the things that you have created, those things by which you are now moving through, operating, you're serving others. Give them a taste of it, and then we are going to dissect that journey and get into the flavor of how you got there. Talk to us about those things.
Absolutely. So I guess the tangible manifestation of all of that, the journey I've gone through, became a book, poetry book, called I Made a Place for You. I just published it November 1st, and it was me getting everything inside outside, which off kind of off camera, you and I were you just mentioned something about, you know, we live in kind of inside and outside. And for me, I guess I'll take you back to San Francisco. So this was 2015. I lost my job, and I didn't want to go home. So I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and I had decided that, you know, whether it was pride or ego, I'm not sure, but I decided I'd rather live out in the streets than go back home. Right. So I had family that said I could come home. I talked to my mom, and she, you know, begged me to come home several times. But for me, there was something like that was missing with my own like personal development and growth. I think that being away from my family, it allowed me to feel that independence that like you believe you need as a kid, you know, or that you hear adults talking about, like, oh yeah, you need to pay your bills, you need to do this, you need to do that. And like, you know, it would be a slight if you weren't doing those things, right? So if you're not paying your bills, if you're borrowing your mom's car, all those things you had heard, at least me as a kid from a, you know, single parent household, like those are things my mom had to boss up, in the sense, you know, the independent woman identity. My mom had to do those things for herself. So even in my own house, I felt like as a man, even a young man and the son in the household, like it was going to also be my responsibility to do all those things. You know, if my mom had to do those and provide for us, then I should obviously grow up and do that.
So I had this like, let's go back, because how we do it here, Damien, we go back. I want to go back into your childhood, because I believe this location right here, our childhood, is where our mindset begins to formulate. And it is my belief that as young children, a young person, an incident usually happens. Sometimes it's, however that incident happens, sometimes it's not a drastic thing, sometimes it is. But once that incident happened, based on the interpretation from this young individual, we then began to make decisions, and those decisions guide our lives for many years until we get older and realize, wait a minute, I need to do something about that decision because it's actually not serving me as it did before. So talk to us a little about your childhood. What was it like? And if you can share some of that with us.
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in Columbus, Ohio, as I mentioned earlier. My parents were together until I was 7, and then they got divorced. So I think that that defining moment that changed a lot of my mentality would have been that. There was a sort of irrigation and reckoning that happened in my life. You know, I still remember the day. You know, I wrote a poem about it a long time ago, about seeing like my dad's car there when I got off the bus and like packing his, putting his bags in the suit in his trunk. And I still remember the car and all that stuff. And so I think that like that was a very challenging moment. And like even as an adult, I still see like the kind of embers of that burning, you know, in my life, of that, like those feelings that started off over 20 years ago. And I think that definitely changed my perspective on relationships, changed my perspective on the family. So like my household looked like me, my mom, my aunt, my grandma, and my little brother. And so it didn't look like a nuclear family. And it didn't mean that there was anything wrong with it. I actually probably had more support than the average person. I had 3 women and my grandma was there. So she wasn't always at work, you know, towards the later end of her, you know, my time living in the household, she was already retired. So that was great for me in that sense. But I think that there were things that like, you just wonder as a kid too, like, what is it that like I couldn't play football, for instance, for the longest time. Like I wanted to, but I wasn't allowed. And I always wonder, you know, if I had a dad there that was like, hey, no, my son can play football, I'm going to take him to practice and all this stuff, when I was younger, if I could have played, you know, those are like, that's a little example, but I could take that to super meaningful examples too. You know, I could take that to like, just like very important lessons. But I think that the thing that really disrupted my childhood would have been like when I was 7, it changed a lot of, how I felt about closeness and connectedness. You know, I started to go to my dad's house every other weekend. And so like when you do that as a kid, I think it's challenging because now you have to like get excited for Friday. And then on Sunday, you have to get sad again because you're coming back home. And then you have to do that again every 2 weeks. And it's challenging. And I don't know if people really understand like the tug of war that has in your heart, you know, over time, because like now you're growing fonder of both these sets of people, but there's a natural tension between them because they're the opposite ends of what was that burning fire from, you know, your youth.
Yeah. I think it's because my children came through a divorce as well. And I tried my best to navigate through that, but you can't, like you're talking about, those internal gauges. You know, there's nothing that either parent can do, because that traumatic situation is definitely going to impact that child's perspective. As you mentioned, you know, the excitement of going, the anticipation of going, and the sadness of leaving. And that's, until you mention it, I never looked at it that way amongst with my boys, because, but you sense it. But until you mention it, I kind of got a better understanding, if you will. And I was I saw some of the effects of that.
Yeah. I was just talking to my wife about this last night. And, it's interesting because I think that like, it's normal for us to say that we're doing the best we can, you know, for everyone. Like it's normal to believe that like we're doing the most we can, the best we can. And it's a comforting feeling for us. It gives us a little solace inside to believe that. But I think that when you zoom out sometime, you have to realize that like if your best is still like kind of in the crucible, then that doesn't mean that it's the best possible scenario, right? So like sometimes you will think like my parents might have thought that it was good for us to have the Christmases separate. But in my head, now as an adult, I think, well, if I was in the situation, I'd like to have Christmases together if possible, you know, and like maybe that's something they couldn't have conceived of because of their situation, the circumstances, and like, it just wasn't best for them or whatever. But like in your, you know, you have to, for me, I have to think about all the trauma that I had set in, I had left to allow to sit and fester inside of me, like not being a person that delivers that to someone else. So I found myself as a stepfather now too. Like, how do I not just repackage trauma from my childhood? Right. How do I not make, it's not like hazing, like family hazing almost. Like, how do I not put you through this just because like that was the best they did, you know? And not to say that, this is no discredit to my parents at all.
Yeah.
You know, because I was way too young to have any understanding of what was really going on. But I mean, I still am I'm still a person that experienced the situation, you know? And I think that like for me, I've wanted to approach my adult life with as much caution as possible in the emotional realm, because I feel that like I did have to learn how to be broken and repair myself, you know? And I can avoid being part of that fracturing process for somebody else, then I think that that's a good use of my time here.
I think I think each generation has that opportunity to if you will, there's some ancestral things that passes down within families. And I remember in my family, one of the things, because I grew up as a child in British Guiana, and I would tell my sons, I was just talking to one of my sons a couple of days ago about, we were talking about child abuse, and I was trying to explain to him, and I never really talked to my children about it. In my culture in Guiana, I would tell them child abuse was like a sport. Mm. The things that I went through, my parents would be locked up for and put in a black site, you know, in the United States. But in that culture where I was from, it was a normal thing. And I remember having to deal with the consequences of that type of upbringing and dealing with it, because I wanted something different than what I had with my parents, and I wanted it bad, but it was a struggle to overcome the programming that I got out of that trauma. And I remember seeking advice and counsel and all the different things. And I remember picking up a book. One of the things that I brought with me from that trauma was anger and so forth. And I remember picking up a book and reading a couple of things in a line or two within the book, Damien. And I just went to read it. I just picked it up. And the first chapter, a couple of verses popped out of there and jumped into my spirit. I closed the book, changed my life. I realized I got a revelation about the hurt, the pain, and the price of anger. And for the first time, I got my eyes opened up, and I saw into myself and to my children. And as they say, you know, put that baby to rest. And it was a journey, you know, every journey is back and forth. But that journey was worth it, to a place where now I don't respond that way. But I remember having the opportunity to make a decision, like you said, I don't want to carry this on. I need some guidance how to relinquish this pain and the fruits of the pain, which was my anger, so that I don't have to pass it into my boys. And I find that I would have to sit down and talk with them when I screwed up, if you will. I'd get down on my knees and come to their face and talk with them and say, hey, you know, I need your forgiveness. I'm working this out, and I should have never handled it that way. And I apologize. And I, you know, and so I had that conversation, but as we were having ours, I realized some things. One is always growing, man. And that's why I love these conversations. Talk to us, Damien, as you are moving through this young man, 7 years old, the impact and the perspective of changes. And how did you relate to the outside? You had your family, you know, your mom and your other family members. How did you relate to the outsiders, your friends, your schoolmates? How did you relate to them from this space of the trauma that you had experienced?
I for a long time, and I would say until I went to college, I would say that I was bad at making friends. I think mm-hmm. that I was a great student, so it was easy for me to just focus on the work and like taking my quizzes and doing home and studying, and like I was good at being the classmate. So like if I had people who like, yeah, we're trying to see who gets the highest grade on the quiz, but like I was not going to the movies with them on the weekend or invite them to my birthday parties or anything like that. Yeah. I always had a girlfriend, like pretty much at all times throughout school. And maybe like part of that was like the crutch of like an emotional crutch. That's something I've thought about before. I've thought maybe that could be a thing. But I think that it was tough for me because, when you are a product of those environments, it's difficult sometimes to trust that the rug isn't going to be swept from under your feet again. So to me, I didn't want to develop lasting friendships because I had a family that wasn't lasting. You see what I'm saying? So like to me, mm-hmm. if that's the example. And again, like you said, you're the imprinting stage for a child, you know, seven years old, you're still in that time. So if that's what you believe, you know, like I wasn't sure I wanted to forge more friendships. And so it wasn't until like way later in life where I start to understand like the utility of friendships and the point of being around people and like what the spirit and energy of that and what that's for. Mm-hmm. And also I think it has to do with like being able to know what you're bringing to, like I'm able to bring a better self now than I could when I was a broken, wounded young man in high school.
Yeah.
So I would say like not great for the longest time.
How did you, when you're moving through life, you're now in high school and you are managing your life in the fashion that you just described. When you decide to go to college, what, and I know the probably being a single, having a single mom is pushing you that way as to college and why did you pick the field that you went into when you were, how did it go about? What was the conversations like about you having to go to school or not? And why did you pursue the field that you picked?
Yeah, there were not a lot of conversations. I mean, I was the first person to go to college in my family. So the conversations were that, you know, I, at the time I had a lot of, pent up aggression and emotion. And like for whatever reason, I felt like I was at the point where I could start to see behind the veil of like what my life was. And sometimes, you know, like I drive around like where I grew up now and like it feels different than, you know, you go back places when you're older and they feel different than you remember. You know, you used to eat at that McDonald's and it looked huge, you know, and now you go there and you're like, this is a little tiny place, you know? but I wanted to get away from Ohio. So that was my main goal. My main goal was to get away from Ohio and go study and just like see what else was out there. So I went to North Carolina to Davidson College and I studied sociology because I loved writing. I had tried out a bunch of stuff. I was pre-med. I thought I wanted to be a doctor, mostly because that's what everyone told me I should be because I was smart, you know, and I didn't know anything else. I didn't know any professors. I didn't know any lawyers. I didn't know any bankers. I didn't know any, I never even heard of a consultant until I went to college. I didn't know any of those people. So those professions were, they might as well be Disney characters, you know, to me at that time. But when I got to college, I found that like sociology was a place where they were like exploring interesting ideas and asking interesting questions in ways that were like allowed and also considered so like scientific in the social sciences sense, you know, and I, like they were studying fatherhood and religion and masculinity. And so like I met a professor who was doing research on how non-resident fathers affected like boys' masculinity masculine identity formation. So basically like if the dad's not in the house, how does it affect the boy becoming a man? And it was like, I could study my own life. That's what I felt like, you know, I wanted to know the answer to that question. And I thought there's no way they're going to let me like graduate and study this for the next 3 years. And they did, you know, so the fact that was possible, I think it was like, it was a match made in heaven because the concepts are interesting to me. You know, the sociological concepts are fascinating. They were different tools and lenses for me to look at the world. And I knew it wasn't the end all be all only way to, you know, look at things because I'm hanging out with anthropologists, I'm hanging out with political scientists, I'm hanging out with biologists. And I know they're also doing groundbreaking, engaging work that is fascinating too, using completely different sets of tools. But for me, it's like, this gave me a little bit of space to like examine my own life, but also feel like I was making headways towards something that was going to help other people too. So I got to help work on a couple book projects and publish some articles, co-authored journal articles. And that was all fun. But I think that the crux of why I was studying it was just because I was trying to answer unanswered questions I had about myself.
Let me ask you a question. As you began to acquire the knowledge as you were studying about and taking a look at yourself, what were some of those things that you started to notice, Damien, that, you know, you were, again, acquiring the knowledge and looking at yourself and hanging out with these different type of individuals. And all of this knowledge is being deposited into this traumatized young man. And what did you do with that knowledge and how did it begin to affect you?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. I think the best way I can answer that is like, if you go to your friend's house, you know, for a sleepover for the first time and you didn't know that like their parents bring out the dinner on trays and they all sit at the table. And like they have a record in the back, or maybe one of the kids goes and plays piano. They have a piano in their kitchen as well, you know, in their living room. And he plays the piano before dinner. And like, then they sit and talk about what's going on during the day. And then maybe they watch a movie and then later they like have coffee together. And like, you see, like, you see that and you're used to like eating your food in your room, right? Like family dinners were not common. You know, we did do that. Yeah. We did eat dinners together sometimes, but when you go see something like that and like, okay, so imagine that times like 50,000 people, you know, different people that you meet. So it's like, I feel like college was that for me. It was like going to expose myself to like the different ways that people were like living their lives and just meeting people that had good relationships with their dad too. Like I joined a fraternity. And part of that was because I felt like I wasn't the best brother in real life. Mm-hmm. So I thought at the time, if I joined the fraternity, then it would help me learn how to like understand brotherhood in a much deeper way. And I could carry that back into my real life. Right. And these are all like, this is kind of frilly when you think about it later, but you know, at the time I really, that was a real motivation for me. I really wanted to go feel, I really felt like that was going to happen. And I think I got to learn a lot about you, those are intimate relationships. Those are deep friendships and deep connections that you forge, you know, joining a fraternity. And so getting to spend time at my fraternity brothers' houses or for holidays and for, you know, just random get togethers, I think you just get to see how other people and their families operate. And like, if you don't have a solid foundation and you're not centered and you start to see all these things that look like the grass is greener on the other side, then it's like little thorns going into you each time because even though you're enjoying yourself there, you still see it as like, I'm a little jealous or I still wish my life was like this, or it's the other side. You feel bad about the fact that your life was so much different than this. Like, what did you miss? I always tell this joke. It's like, I never had a smoothie until I was like 22, you know? Mm-hmm. And now like kids are having smoothies when they're like, you know, kids have smoothies when they're like 3 or 4 in some people's households, right? I never saw a smoothie, you know? And so like, I never saw hummus. I never had hummus until I was in college, right? And these are things that like, to me are funny now because like, I eat the fancy foods now, but back then, like I would have never conceived of eating a chickpea.
Yeah.
You know, I was eating KFC and Captain D's and Long John Silver's and Fast and Burger King because that's like that. We just had, I had 3 working women in my house and we had to eat and everyone wasn't cooking, you know? I feel like those stories are hard to tell because it seems like that's a bad thing, but it's not necessarily bad. I think that when you're older and you can just like, you can look back at it. For me, it's just like, sometimes you wish it was different, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know how else to capture that, but sometimes you wish it was different. It can't be. And now that's the real question. What do you do with that? And for me, what I have to do with that is I have to take all that bundled up trauma, energy, and do something productive with it. So I write poems.
I don't think you're alone. I think we all have those questions as to, you know, what do we do with all of this information? I know what you're talking about. My brother is a professor, and we have some conversation about the Black family and when we migrated to the United States, you know, and people talk about, you know, they're saying you can be the best you can be anything. I can't remember having those conversations in the Black family. And my brother and I, we talk about that. We try to remember if we had that type of conversation, tangible exchange, that we can do that. And the generation that came, my generation that migrated first, I asked my brother about, has there been any kind of a study about that? And how did we assimilate into society? Because when I came in, Damien, I was in my second year in college. I was 12 years old, and they put me in junior high school. And so it was a difficult time for me to assimilate into the American mindset because I found like it betrayed everything that I was. And I had to come up with something to remake, to adjust. And it took a little while. And so, it's like that when you have all this stuff happening outside of you. And you wish you could go back and do this kind of stuff. But I think what it is, though, it makes us who we are today. We look back into some of those things and we appreciate that we did went through those things because it gave us a certain perspective that we can look into and gather information and said, oh, I can do it a little different with my children, we eat a little healthier. We do a little different things and stuff like that. But, you know, we get that as we walk through. Talk to me, Damien, about, because I find that really fascinating because you're assimilating all this information. And I know what you're talking about. I hated when I got through it, went through my divorce, I hated to see people, families happy. Yeah, when I would take my kids out, I just hated it. I was like, mm-hmm. Started internalizing, how did I made it? How come I, you know, all of that? How come I didn't make it work? What's wrong with me? I get all of that, when you look into that. So as you began to deposit that type of belief now, because it is a belief within you, as you began to, look at what's around you and you begin to excavate and these feelings begin to clash. What started to happen to you mentally, Damon, as you're dealing with all of this coming up, hanging out with your boys and your different families and you're seeing all these different things? What did it start to do to you as an individual as you begin to look around and experience your life and move through it?
Yeah. At the time, it made me want to separate myself. Yeah, I would say that if we're still back there, then I wanted to just get away from it. I would see it and I would appreciate parts of it and I would hate other parts of it. I'd see someone's, kind of like what you said, I'd see parts of it and I'd be like, oh, that's a good way to live. Like they have extra stuff in the basement. They have 6 cases of vitamin water down there. So every time they want a vitamin water or a Gatorade, they don't have to go to the BP and go grab one and some hot Cheetos. They can just go downstairs and grab a Gatorade from the basement. That's cool. You see stuff like that and you're like, practical things like that are great. Yeah. But other parts of it, I still saw stuff I didn't like. I saw like some of my friends, their parents were doctors and like the dads come home like 2 nights later after they've been in surgery for however long. And the wives are just up all night and sad. And please invite your friends over because the husband's never there. I saw all that too. Like Zoom calls the kids asleep. I saw all those things. And so there's parts of that, like you can always like imagine that someone else's life is better. I think that like I put myself in situations a lot of times where, I got to see it firsthand and I could see like the good parts and I also could see the bad parts. And it was my job to like be the thread between both those and figure it out for myself. Like, okay, is that better or not really better? It's different, but better might not be the word. So for me, it's like how I made sense of it was like, I'll take the good parts from these things. So do I have extra Gatorade or waters in my house now? Yes. I'm also not FaceTiming my wife to sleep right now. You know what I mean? So like I took parts of those lessons from my kid or from my childhood, but like there's other stuff I saw that I also didn't want to be in my life either.
So how did you, once you began to move through college and so forth, as you're now beginning to step out of college and you're now looking into that other space that we visit as far as the working life, as they say, and we are now beginning to, as they say, out there, you're going to start, paying your dues, if you will. How did you transition from the college arena, walking in now into the corporate America space? Do you remember what it was that moved you into that direction that you took? And why did you go to that direction once you got out of college?
Yeah, so out of college, I went to grad school for 2 years and I was in a PhD program at the University of Michigan. And I decided about a year and 10 months in that I wasn't going to stay. Similar situation. I saw the lifestyle of the professors who I originally wanted to become, you go on the website, you're like, oh, let me look at University of Chicago and see who's the dean of that school. I'm like, I want to be that guy. Let me look at his resume and see what he's, see what he's done. But like what you don't realize is that when I got to grad school and I saw these people's like day to day lives, and it's not just the CV. Like it's not just that, it's the endless meetings and the mountains tall piles of papers and all the stuff. Yeah. And the students and the parents and the this and the drinking and the this and the sadness and the depression and the therapy and all the stuff, right? And none of that's on the website.
Yeah.
None of that's on the website. And so when I got there, I was like, I don't want to do this. I felt like it was going to lead me to a future that I was going to regret. So, I went to work for a nonprofit media company and, we wrote Black History news stories. And so that was an easy transition from school to me because I got to still utilize my writing abilities and I was writing about a topic that I cared about. So I didn't feel like it was pulling teeth at the time. For me, so that transition wasn't terrible. It wasn't bad because I was still working on content. I got to use some of the sociological kind of like stuff that I learned from school mm-hmm. and still apply it to the work. But like a little after that job, like it has been a little more challenging because, you know, when you're a free thinker in the sense, like you described earlier, it's hard sometimes to do arbitrary things, and the workforce is primed. It's primed for that. It's plug and play mostly. Like they want you to become whatever version of that tool that they need you to be. They're not really trying to grow you into like whoever you want to be. So it's, I have a lot of trouble with it sometimes. But this is why I try to do things outside of work that make me feel good creatively and they get my passions out. Because if not, then I think that like that stuff sits there dormant long enough, then it becomes an emotional problem. And maybe a spiritual problem, you know, for you as well, because you have gifts not being used and talents not being used. And you find yourself giving all your time to, you know, things that are not suiting you and feeding your soul inside. So to me, I think that like work has its place. I do work a lot, you know, but I would say that like it's not my identity. I think I made a transition from the past, because in the past, like school, having the fellowships and the accolades, and I went to this school and this, and I know this guy and that guy, that becomes your identity in a sense. Like you walk around with it, like your jacket, and you tell people, and it gets you into places, and it makes people see you a certain type of way. And you kind of get used to that social currency from, you know, whatever your status, whatever your label and status and titles are. But when you're a free thinker or a creative, those things are less important. It's more about, like you said, what you brought into the world, what you're bringing, what did you make, what did you bring from inside of you that didn't exist before? And like that thing packaged up has so much of you inside that it's a much bigger contribution than like 8 hours in a desk somewhere typing whatever you're typing.
Yeah, I think it's designed, the 8 hours and so forth is designed to keep us in a state of numbness, if you will. Outside of that, thing that you came with, that's where your joy lies. That's where a lot of your identity, in the sense of your oneness with the creator, oneness with all, that thing that resides there, that when you get into that space, there is a specific connectiveness that you feel, man. It's different. It's hard to explain. You feel different. Mm-hmm. But when you're in it, you feel this strength, this this thing that is different. It's hard to explain. And I tell people, hurry up and get there, because once you hurry up and get there, you'll get a chance to see what we're talking about. And you're again trying to explain it to them and bring in the tangible words. And sometimes within the English language, it's difficult to bring that precise picture into it, because it is a oneness that I can, is a place that you belong. You feel belonging, like you're there. And I believe that the job and all these different things are designed to keep us out of there, man, because they don't want us to get there, because over there is our freedom. As I mentioned to you, they're not interested in freedom. They're interested in controlling you and I, as they did in the Matrix. It says we are batteries. We are something that powers their desire and what they want. So here you are, and you're coming in to this, and you're moving through your journey, because I want to talk about, you mentioned, and I've read your story where you became homeless, and that is a traumatic information. And talk to us about that process, because this is some of the places where you're going to begin to start to address some of those hidden things that are residing within you unaware, or even you're not dealing with it, that you have to deal with it. Talk to us about how did it navigate to not having that source of supply, and what did it do to you? I know you talked about reaching out to your parents and not your mom and not going and so forth. What did it do to you, Damien, in creating who you are today?
Yeah, I think that the biggest part that impacted me was the mental kind of, there was a fracturing, and I wrote this word in my book too, like on the back cover, just because during this kind of crisis, I think that I went from becoming a person who thought about myself a certain way to a person that had to feel about myself a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll try to tease that out. Like when I relied a lot on the accolades or the check boxes that I had checked off. Like, did you graduate? Yes. Did you do this? Yes. Did you follow this? Yes. And like other things that people wanted that were coveted, I found like, this is interesting. Like, I might not even want this, but like, I think I could get it, you know? And if I get it, then they're going to respect me for that thing. Right. So I went from being that person to being a person who, like, when you're in the streets at the homeless shelter, nobody cares about you. Nobody ever asked me to see my thesis at the food pantry. Never, you know? And so like, I had to relearn how to be a human and interact with people, because I realized that like, I had been navigating in this bubble with other people who are navigating the same bubble. And it's just like, you're kind of spinning it. It's almost like ballroom dancing, you know, and an invisible ballroom dancing. We're all just kind of like moving around and like doing our thing, but we're all still bumping shoulders and we're going to bump into each other eventually, but we're still separating. It's a very delicate, scary, invisible dance, you know? And I feel like when I was out there, I realized that it's not the same dance. You have to see people. And you can't go anywhere. There's no hiding. You can't go, you know, in real life, you know, they say like keyboard warriors, right? You can type and say whatever you want to somebody and hit send and, you know, tweet it and they'll never be able to find you because your IP address is blocked and they don't know where you live. But when you're out there, the same person's going to see you in the morning in the line when you're picking up your food, and same person's probably going to see you at the park. And, you know, so it's like, I went from being this very closed off, almost nearly, I would probably say at the time, elitist in a sense, person, entitled in a sense, to a person who had to be humble and learn how to approach people again, learn how to talk to people, learn how to stop judging, not judge people based on their circumstances, because everyone out there is like, they all also have a backstory. And I always say, like, if people were to look at me, they would have no idea. They would have had no idea, like, what I had done before that, you know? My story would have been so confusing to them, you know, and I allowed myself to imagine the same for those other people as well. Like, no, it's not just like all these people are the same. Impossible, you know? And so for me, it was a very earth shattering identity crisis, because all the things I relied on for so long no longer work. It's like, you have to get a new toolbox. Yeah. And so that was the biggest, change and challenge for me.
Yeah. That awareness, coming to the space where you need to recreate yourself now, you know, because that is, again, a traumatized position, because you've done all the things that they say you should have done. I've acquired, actually, we went a little beyond some of the things, you know, as you began to investigate yourself here and began to, I know in hindsight, you don't look at it as a gift, but it was a gift, that marvelous gift to get you to now become Damien. Whereas before, like you said, we are all that ballroom dancer with a number on our back and just bouncing around and coming around, you know, from time to time. As you began to witness yourself here, Damien, and all those training that you had encountered, how did those memories and those, how did you begin to now utilize and take those tools to now begin to create from this space that you are, to move you from where you are to where you were then to where you are today? What were some of those mindset, those perspective that you had to face, and how did you face it? What tools did you utilize to shift that mindset to begin to create your space as you're in today?
Yeah. So, I mean, I meditate. That's important. I would say that's something I've been practicing for roughly 10 years now, off and on.
Obviously. Let me ask you something. I hate to interrupt you here, Damien. Here you are in this space, and lots of bodies are coming around you. And how did you, because I tell people, meditation is probably one of the most powerful tools you will ever use in your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to take away that excuse that a lot of people make excuses. And I want you to talk about, here you are in that situation, and yet you realize the value of needing to meditate, and you did it regardless. And because a lot of people, Damien, make excuses And I want you to take that away from them, because it is an excuse and it needs to be taken away from them, man.
Yeah, I just developed my own internal guilt system and account. I mean, I'm my own accountability partner. I think when you're out there by yourself, there's nobody. That's the thing. You grow up in a house with parents or whoever you grow up with, and there's always people to tell you, hey, like, clean up your room and pick up your trash and make sure you eat your food. But when you're an adult, there's no more people like that. And when I was out there by myself, there's definitely no one like that. So I had to develop my own internal guilt system. So I became accountable to myself. So I said that the only thing I have is like what I say I'm going to do. And so for me, waking up and like, I obviously have nothing but time. You know, there's beautiful parks and I could go and I'm already awake at the crack of dawn. So like the sun's rising and I'm already awake late, you know? So like for me, it was just like, it was like one of those things that even in like a bitter time, you know, a bittersweet time, it was one of those things I kind of held onto because I knew the value of that. There was a clarity and a feeling. And I felt like, kind of feels like when you brush your teeth in the morning, you know, like the day starting, like brushing your teeth, usually just makes you feel like a new day, you know? And so for me, it's that same kind of like energizing feeling. So for me, even now when I wake up and I'm like, oh man, I only got 20 minutes and I woke up a little late, I'm like, well, find a 15 minute meditation or do it, you know, or just do a 10 minute meditation this morning. But like, I still tell myself like, hey, you have to do this. And I think that like, it's also, for me, I had to believe in it as well. You have to believe that like, there is some benefit in being centered and still and like understanding how your thoughts work. And I think a lot of it is that people don't look into like how the mechanics of all of it work, right? So like, it's not just like being quiet. That's not what it is. If you're not in touch with the voice inside of your head and understanding how your heart affects how your decision making and what you feel, and like understanding that you can train these organs like muscles the same way you can train a bicep, you can train your heart and your mind. And so like for me, it's like I'm in the gym every day with my mind and my heart, because those are the muscles that have mattered in my life the most. Like it's never been my biceps or my fists or anything like that, or my legs. I'm not a runner. I'm not a track, you know. For me, it's like my heart and my mind have to be at their 100% Olympic performance, you know, peak at all times, because I want to make sure I can capitalize on opportunities. I want to make sure that I'm present when people are around. I want to make sure that I'm able to give my best self and I'm able to give good advice, or I'm able to listen when people are talking to me. And like, you have to be able to be the bridge builder between all those things. And meditation is one of those easy, it's easy for you to practice every day, easy for you to get the hang of. And once you do that, there's so many benefits I found for myself that like, I mean, we could talk about that forever.
Yeah. I love it. It changed my life. It really did because I was spinning around in circles until I began to meditate, and I saw what it produced. Now talk to us, Damon. What did it begin to produce? The tangible things that you began to notice in your life as you began to work out your muscles, if you will, and you see it in the natural realm where you begin to get a little cut, more definition and so forth. Talk to us as you began to notice the changes, if you will, in the bicep of your minds and what it started to produce. And usually it starts to internally produce things that eventually seeps out into the scene. Talk to us about some of those internal things that began to change within your being, and how did it begin to manifest on the outside?
Yeah, I think it reminded me that I needed to return to the good parts of my childhood. I think that the problem with trauma sometimes is that you want to block off that entire time, right? So everything from 7 and whatever, like I want to forget that time, you know? But there was a lot of good stuff that happened during that time. And I think that when I, you know, when I started meditating, it allowed me to remember like, hey, you used to like to write, you used to like to draw sometimes, you used to like to play basketball, you used to like to swim, you used to like to play video games, you know, all these things before you became this hardened person from these experiences, you know, all this stuff that has blocked off these like channels of enjoyment and joy for you. I think that it allowed me to like see, no, you need to incorporate parts of that back into your life, because if that was, you know, if you were 5 years old and that video game was making you feel that way, or that Pokemon card or whatever, then like, see what one makes you feel now, you know, what is it?
Yeah.
Like, that's nostalgia, you know? And so that's one way. I would say also, it just helped me know that I needed to make sure that everyone around me was going to was respectful of my emotional, mental, spiritual bubble now. And that's something I never really protected before. I was kind of like the party guy for a while because I was, you know, sad fraternity boy, you know, party a lot. So I didn't care who was around me. I wasn't protecting my energy and my space at all. And I think that like it allowed me to become way more protective of that. So I could, I feel like now that's necessary because to be centered and still and clear, you have to keep those kind of negative forces out of your space. I mean, and meditation has definitely allowed that to manifest way more in my life. And, I think just becoming more clear as a creative person, the output shows itself. You know, like I didn't try to write a book. I just started writing poems in a notebook and it became a book. All the times I tried to write a book, it didn't work. I could never just sit down and start writing, but finally I just started writing poems down. And then eventually I had like 25 and I was like, I guess I could publish these. And then there it was, you know, and it was fascinating to me because all the times I had sat down and sat in front of my computer and started typing and just like gave up before, like no chance I was going to finish the book. But this time it was, I was much more aligned, you know, with my goal.
As you, because I did the same thing happened to me, was out of my meditation that I sat down and I started writing my books. And, I remember my kids, I had four boys that were, I was a single dad, Damien, with four of my boys, and they had their friends in my living room. At the time, they were learning. Half of my room was rapping. The other half of my room was breakdancing. The other half is hanging out all over. And I was downstairs in that, and I was so focused typing that I didn't even hear none of what they were doing. And because I was so zoned. And I got there as a result of my meditation where I can sit in that type of environment and remain absolutely focused on what is necessary and needed to be accomplished. As you're doing this and then you're moving forward, because I want people to understand that meditation is one tool. There's other things. There's journaling. There's other things that you can utilize to bring you into focus and quiet the noise that you're hearing. That will cause you to begin to look inward to get the answers that have always been there and the direction. And Damien talks about the flow that begins to happen when you're there, that you're able, the book began to flow out as he began to align himself with his meditation and getting all of the things internally walking in its right position, if you will. Here you are. You're now, the book is beginning to flow. You are beginning to move in your life. Talk to us, Damien, as to how did you get to where you are today? What were the steps that brought you to today in the sense of when you tell your story? What were those things that you can recollect that, hey, started to guide you to your present situation?
Yeah, I think that, it really helps to have other people tell me how they felt when I told them my story. I think because sometimes you don't really know, because for me, it's like some parts of it are embarrassing and disappointing and sad and, you know, and like they don't make you look good in a favorable light. So I'm like, I would be a little reserved about just sharing openly, like my experiences. And then I would hear enough times that like, you should tell people like that will help a lot of people because other people are going through that. And like, it's weird because it doesn't seem like that's the right. It doesn't seem like that's right. Like, why would it be helpful for people to hear about my traumatic story? Don't people want to hear about, the good stuff? But then I realized like, no, you want to, there's a relational aspect of this. You know, the part that is my job is not to know what happens with my story, right? My job is just to, and it's the same reason why I write in the first place. It's like, I want to invite people to experience me in this way, you know? Yeah. And like, I'm not expecting anything in return. It's healing for me to talk about and gain new ways of, you know, I don't pre-write anything for any of my interviews or anything. Like I don't want to come prepared. I want to talk. And like, I'm still working this out. You know, I'm still a work in progress. And so this is a part of my healing journey as well. You know, so I'm gaining as much from this as whoever might be listening, because I haven't thought of all the right ways. I haven't thought of all the right ways to solve all these mental problems. You know, I haven't figured it all out. There's still questions unanswered. There's still curiosities unsolved, and they're not as dire or the same as the ones before, but like there's still some of that there. So to me, this is a natural next step. Like talking to you, for instance, you're a person who you are able to look at the world from a very different perspective than the average person, you know? And I think that like it's important to be in spaces with people like that, because it helps you tease out, even if I can tease out one little micro element of my own story from talking to you, that's beneficial to me and the listener. And so that's why I wanted to bring my story to the podcast and just to the platform in general. Kind of serving a dual purpose.
Yeah, that's why I want to have you, man. I want to have people like yourself come, because I think the Facebook pictures, you know, that's not life, man. That's not life. Is dirty, Damien. There's a dirtiness to it, which is not bad. I think that's where the good stuff is, because I tell them that's where the local hang out. You know, all the fancy people over there, they got people cleaning up places and whatever it is. But I like hanging out with the locals where people don't pay attention to that. That's where the good food is. That's where the connectiveness that is real, you know, I'm not talking the superficial one that we were programmed to, like you said, on the dance floor, that, you know, what do you do? How do you do it? Whatever. And you could have this conversation. But when you're with the locals, as you say, it is a deeper conversation. It is even much more powerful. And I believe, Damien, that your story, all of your story is powerful. Why? Because there are others out there. If you remember, there are other people within that space of homelessness. And your story can be impactful to those that are there, that have just arrived and are broken and want to know, how do I come out? And they hear your conversation on a podcast, sitting there with someone, and it goes, wait a minute, Damien did it. I need to get his stuff. I need to hook into his energy, talk to him. And so I always invite people, you know, all of us, all of those who are listening to our conversation, I want you to, I'm going to provide those things for you to buy his books, get to the library, get to anyone, pull up with a couple of friends and get it, because the words are there to empower you, to encourage you, to lift you up. Why? Because he knows where you are. He knows how to guide you out of there as well. And so I'm sure Damien wouldn't mind you even to reach out to him if you are in need. Talk to him. And he will be able to hold your hand and walk you through so that you will become a better human spirit. And we want to see you in a space where you're kicking ass, as they say, so that people can look at you and go, wait a minute, that person has a powerful story. And just like Damien does. Damien, talk to me about when you are in that conversation with someone, because I think this is where we ought to be living. And you're in that conversation with someone, and you know, you've heard their struggle and you identify with them. And through your conversation, if you will, that dance of your story, your victory and your learning experience, when you begin to talk to them and they begin to get it, if you will, that light bulb, Damien, pops into their head and they now begin to switch their perspective. Talk to me as to one of those incidents that you lived and got a chance to experience and what it did to you and that individual.
I really can't say I've had any of those, honestly. These are the first times that I'm talking about a lot of this stuff. You know, I have talked to my mom. I've talked to my wife. I've talked to my aunt. About certain scenario, you know, just parts of what it was like to be out there. But I haven't had any of those. I haven't got to the point where it's like people know, like people are now finding out the full story, you know, about what I went through. And so I would anticipate that that's coming down the pipeline, where someone feels comfortable enough to be like, hey, like either I know somebody that's going through this, or, you know, but I guess the closest would be like, we have a family friend who, you know, they have a kid who's going through a tough time, and I have provided some advice to him. But not in the same way, like not the same scenario, nothing even close. I think that like, it would be cool. You know, I think it would be useful. I would love that. You know, I would be happy to give someone who either is in that position or trying to get out of that position, some more perspectives. You know, I don't feel like I don't like to say I give advice, right? Or I think that like that's a funny word to me for another day. But I think that I do offer a perspective, and the more perspectives people can have to kind of funnel down to make their own, you know, I like all the information. You know, there are people, I think there are some people who they only want the information that fits with their point or fits with their mindset. I want all the information. Mm-hmm. I want the good and the bad stuff, and I want to wrestle with it, and I want to figure out what makes the most sense for me, you know? And so I am a fan of getting different perspectives. It's always helped me. You know, I want to hear the guy play devil's advocate over here and tell me the other side of the thing I wasn't thinking about. And I want to have to think about that. And I want to have to say maybe parts that are right, maybe parts that are wrong. And just knowing that like, I'm going to face that, you know, because I think that when you've been through very traumatic situations, and you feel like things have been, like I mentioned earlier, have been swept from underneath of you, then you don't want to leave anything up to mystery and chance anymore. So now you want all the information because you feel like the more perspectives, the more informed you're moving throughout life. And so for me, I would love to like give whoever, you know, as much of myself as possible. And I hope to do that, whether it's just like talking to people and in the things like you mentioned that I put into the world.
I'm sure you will, man. You are, as you said, you're beginning, you're here in the beginning aspects of it. And trust me, I do not believe that any of us go through our journey and we don't get to experience that. I think that is why we go through our journey. I have a good friend of mine, and she always says perspective is everything. And it is absolutely true. It is what you perceive and how you perceive things. It goes into your belief system, and then it becomes what you act on and what you think on and all of those things, and it manifests. And so I always tell people it is the shifting of your perspective within your situation that will change your situation. And you have one perspective and that's there, and you'll just focus on that. But when you utilize tools like meditation and other type tools that we talked about, and you bring it into your space, as Damien said, you're gathering information, you're pulling from all over. I've read all kinds of books. I've read the Vedas. I've read the I Ching. I've read all kinds of books and philosophy and all the different things. Why? Because like you, I want to gain insight anywhere and anyhow I can, because as you said, I want to put it on and see how it fits. And if it fits right, you know, then I will adapt it into my space. If it doesn't, you know, keep studying, keep bringing in other aspects of all the information. The data is out there, guys. And Damien has some of the data that can bring you out of your situation. Everyone, again, that is listening to this conversation, I want you guys to get his books, begin to give it out as gifts, and make people aware of it, so that you can change their life. Damien, I want to thank you, man, for coming to Threads of Enlightenment. This has been some good stuff. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. This was great. And I would say, if I could add a little last word, that I feel like people, it's been very useful for me to feel more. You know, empathy is one of those words that's kind of like a hot button term right now. That's like, you know, a lot of people are talking about empathy, but like, if we bring that back down to like the core of what that means, it's just like being present, you know, and feeling feelings, especially when, you know, I find myself in rooms a lot of time with people who are not there. It's like, we could all be in different places, even though our body is in the same place, you know? And so for me, like I pride myself now on feeling like I'm where I'm at. And I think that like, it's almost its own type of meditation, because you're practicing being there. You know? And so like when you're always doing that, constantly doing that, and you get in the habit of doing that, it's, everything's more enjoyable. Even something that feels mundane, you know, like making a coffee for instance, like usually that's something you do in a rush because you're out running out the door. But now like if, someone's down, if someone's by, you know, down there while you're making coffee, and you get to have a little morning chat with them and catch up with them and ask them how they're going to, you know, what they're going to do for the day and get a sense for, like, you could make them feel better just by having that conversation, not having your headphones in and being kind of like, you know, smug in the morning because you're in a hurry. You know, for me, it's like making time for everything now, trying to make as much time for presence as possible. I've stopped living in the future, and I've definitely stopped living in the past.
Yeah, it is. Living in the presence is the key. And yeah, you can only learn what you just talked about unless you went through it. And that is the purpose, I believe, of our journey. One of the purpose, I believe, Damien, it is, gives us a chance to introduce ourselves to ourselves. And that is where we learn to be forgiving. We learn how to practice empathy. We learn all of those things with ourselves. And when we learn that, we then now can be present with that person when we're having that coffee. Why? Because we've learned how to be present with ourselves. You have to be empathetic with yourself first before you can be with someone else. How would you know that you're being, that anything about empathy unless you are familiar with it? How do you know anything about love unless you're familiar with it? You got to love yourself. You got to learn how to forgive yourself. And once you have learned all those things, I have a baseline now, Damien, and I tell people when they say things to me, I say, what is your baseline that you can say that statement? But if I learn to love and I learn all those things that you talk about, that's a powerful feeling. It's a powerful place to be. And you can only do that if you are empathetic to yourself. And then you, when you're present with someone, you understand the value of being present. It is something else, man. It's a great thing. And like you said, amazing. Everything becomes different at that point. The birds, the whistles, the dog, the cat, everything is changes. Life is where you ought. And I tell people, get here quickly, man, because everything changed. Damien said a cup of coffee is different. I'm telling you guys, get here as quickly as you can. And again, thank you, man.
Absolutely.
Everyone who's listening to this broadcast, we hope to continually help you to learn how to embrace moments of darkness, because it is in the darkness that we learn how to develop and use our abilities to truly see those parts of ourselves often invisible to us in the light. It becomes your responsibility to navigate through all of your trials, to find out who you truly are and begin your journey to loving yourself, which is possibly one of the most difficult things you will ever do in your life. To love yourself and to find the real you, but always remember to enjoy the journey. Thank you for coming by. Please subscribe. And if you can support us financially, we deeply appreciate it. Until next time, invite your family, friends, neighbors, anyone that you can. You can hear us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Overcast, and many more.